creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
On this episode of Culture Click, we head to the Frozen River Film Festival and take a look at the trials and tribulations of The Wolf in Minnesota. The film examines how the wolf went from being on the endangered species list to being removed and hunted. In the film, we learn how important this animal is to the ecosystem and the similarities we share with them through the eyes of Jim Brandenburg. Jim is a world-renowned National Geographic photographer who spent many years living alongside the wolves and over 45 years documenting them. What you will hear today is the question and answer session that followed the film's presentation. It will inform you of what is currently being done to save the wolf, how important the wolf's survival is, how people can help, the challenges in making the film, and more. The talk is moderated by Crystal Heggie, director of the Frozen River Film Festival, and features filmmaker Julia Huffman, Colette Adkins, senior attorney for biological diversity, who works with the Endangered Species Program, and photographer Jim Brandenburg. I'm Terry Tensett, and you're listening to Culture Click.
My name's Colette Adkins. I'm an attorney and biologist at the Center for Biological Diversity. We're a nonprofit organization focused on endangered species protection. And boy, watching this film was such an emotional journey for me. I'm a lawyer that's been involved in the wolf litigation for over 10 years now, and just seeing so many of my heroes up there, you know, besides obviously Jim Brandenburg and the beautiful work here by Julia that we watched, these wonderful activists, Howard Goldman, who even back when I was a freshman in high school, I was going to animal rights protests with him, and Maureen Hackett, who's done so much to mobilize the wolf movement here in Minnesota, and of course Jane Goodall, and then the scientists like John Vachujic. And it really, to me, it talks about how so many people come together in this movement here, which was to try to maintain protections for wolves in the Great Lakes, in the scientists, the artists, the activists, and behind the scenes too, lawyers like me. And I just wanted to give you a little bit of a historical perspective, just very briefly, just a couple minutes on the wolf litigation. You know, in many ways, we're in a happy moment in history here with wolves, because as the film says here, back in 2014, right before Christmas, just this wonderful gift, sitting at my computer plugging away. It's not a very exciting work as an attorney, just sitting at the computer typing briefs to the court. And an email comes through that wolves are relisted now, that victory came through, tears streaming down my face, and then like within 5 minutes, reporters calling and all the excitement. And compare that back to a couple years previously. I was the lawyer on the case that tried to stop the first hunt in Minnesota, a case that we lost and went forward, and of course the wolf hunt went forward, and tears of sadness in that situation where we find out that we lose that case and wolves are going to be killed. So it really has been a journey of great victories, but also great sadness. But right now we're at a happy point, and just a couple weeks ago, I filed a brief before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. Right now, that a ruling is on appeal at the Court of Appeals, and we're defending that wonderful decision from Judge Howell. What a perfect name, right? Judge Howell. And and she agreed with the environmental groups and the animal welfare groups on every single argument that we made. It's really such a vindication of years worth of work, but it wasn't just this judge. This was the fourth time that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service got rebuffed by the courts. It started back when I was a law student. My very first case that I worked on, two federal courts set aside the first attempt to reduce protections for wolves. That was back in 2005 we got that ruling. A few years later, then in 2008, we got another ruling when the Fish and Wildlife Service tried to remove all protections from wolves in the Great Lakes. 6 months after that decision came down, the Fish and Wildlife Service tried again with another rule.
Julia Huffman, the film's director, interjected off microphone. That decision, the agency actually settled and voluntarily took back the rule after we filed a lawsuit and pointed out all the numerous ways the rule broke the law. And now here again, the 2011 rule that is before the Court of Appeals now.
But what we're worried about is that Congress will interfere, like Congress did in the Northern Rocky Mountains, and legislatively remove protections from wolves. That certainly was a fear right before the holidays this winter. Wolves survived. They didn't get put on the appropriations bill. I'm sure many people in this audience called their congresspersons and hopefully did things to rally public support for wolves, because that's what makes a difference. And we're facing that battle again. I've been told that the bill right now, that maybe some of you that get action alerts, there's a bill right now in front of the House to legislatively remove protections from Great Lakes wolves and wolves in Wyoming. That one's unlikely to pass, but don't lose your vigilance. I think we need to keep calling our congresspersons. The real battle is likely to be with the next appropriations bill in the fall, the Interior Appropriations Bill. But it's so very important that congresspersons hear from you that you care about wolves and wolf protection. And that you, the way we do this is by spreading the word. And of course, I'm so glad that we've got this beautiful film that helps spread the word. But you can spread the word too, just at your dinner table, when you're going out to a restaurant with friends. If you see an article in the paper, write a letter to the editor and respond and share your support for wolves. I think we really do have a responsibility, you know, not just to wolves, but to our wild places. You know, I want to live in a place that has, you know, that still is wild, and having wolves in our woods is something I'm so proud of about Minnesota, and I want it to be that way for my children and their children. And thank you so much for coming out and showing your support for the wolf.
Okay. Hi, everybody.
First, I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming to see the film. It's an honor to be back in Minnesota.
I'm so grateful to be back here at the birthplace of the film, and my inspiration, The Wolf, and Jim Brandenburg, and Howard Goldman, and Chima Ingen. You know, as a filmmaker, there's so much left on the cutting room floor. And you watch your film and you can't help thinking about, you know, all the experiences leading up to just that small little bit that gets in there. But, you know, I was blessed to meet and get to know beautiful people like Jim and Chima Ingen and Howard Goldman, who are just inspiring. And, you know, I've only been working on this issue for 3 or 4 years, but there's people that have been working on it for a lifetime. And I just feel grateful to be able to present to you some of these stories, you know, and some of this dedication. I also, you know, just a little tidbit, it's nice for me to come back. I have relatives in the area, and I was actually conceived not too far from here, so there's something extra special, and my aunt is here with me today. She knows. And the story. But there's lots of reasons for me to be here today, and I'm just so glad to be sharing it at a Frozen River Film Festival in Minnesota. And like you eloquently said, you know, there's so many things that we need to keep doing, because unfortunately this battle continues to be fought. You know, it's been fought for 10 years, and it just continues to be fought. And I don't know if it will just be continuing to the end of time. They're going to be battling about, you know, wanting to kill wolves or not, but it really takes a lot of energy on our part, because there's so much money and so many lobbyists out there wanting, you know, basically wanting to hunt the wolf, that it really does take all of us and sharing it with people, because it takes a lot of energy and a lot of commitment to keep it going, because unfortunately it lasts a long time and could continue. But I just wanted to say thank you again, and I'm open to questions, but I'm going to let Jim speak a few minutes if he'd like to, and then we would like to just, you know, open it up to Q&A if there's anything you'd like to ask us. Thank you.
Well, you heard my story on the screen tonight, but I want to thank Crystal and her colleagues for inviting us here. Film festival, in the context of that, you've seen a lot of movies, and there are a lot of devoted people in this particular movement, like Colette and some of you out here. We're preaching to the converted a little bit. So it's beautiful and sometimes a little painful. We need to have some ears that don't hear these stories. movies like this bring them out there, and I can't tell you how much admiration I have for Julia and what she put into this movie. I know how to work hard. I know how to tell stories with pictures, but I am deeply, deeply in admiration and impressed. This lady calls me from Los Angeles, California. I get a lot of calls from around the world to do things. Something about her countenance on the phone or just the way she said it drew me into it. And I'm very proud to be part of that. And I can't, I don't know how to even say thank you as much as I'd like to you, Julia, and everybody else that work to tell the story of the wolf. We live in a democracy, and we're proud of that, but sometimes I wonder. You heard Howard Goldman say that 79% of Minnesotans don't want a wolf hunt, and we fight this over and over and over again. The democracy only works when people use their voice somehow. Does anyone have the phone number to Washington tonight? We could call them up. I was thinking of a few minutes ago. Literally, they could be voting. They could be voting tomorrow. They might have voted today, probably not, but they could vote tomorrow. But this will come up again. Everybody call them on the cell phone tonight.
We apologize. We're unable to answer the phone right now. Please leave a message with your name and number, and we'll call back as soon as possible. Thanks, and have a nice day.
Too bad we... Let's howl. And I'll let Colette make the context.
Hi, Congressman Waltz. You're hearing the howls of a few hundred people that just watched Medicine of the Wolf and are calling you to ask you to keep protections for wolves in the Great Lakes. Thank you.
I wonder if that's ever been done before. Well, you've heard the story on the screen, and spread the word to those that may not understand or feel, because remember, more than three-fourths of the people in Minnesota are against the wolf hunt. I have not seen a wolf or photographed a wolf in 4.5 years. It's hard to believe that, knowing how many years I did it. What should we do now?
There's a few cute questions. We'll be happy to try and answer them.
Yes, and I will come out with the microphone, so if anybody has a question, I will hand the microphone so that the rest of the audience can hear the question. We'll go right over here.
I'm just curious, because you were talking about the DNR and the Fish and Wildlife, and really haven't seemed to be your allies in this, and I was just wondering why, you know, why those groups aren't fighting on your side.
So it sounds like you're asking why the Minnesota DNR isn't on the side of the wolf, basically.
Right.
Well, you know, typically state agencies aren't in favor of having additional endangered species under their jurisdiction. Honestly, it's something that my nonprofit organization struggles with quite a bit, that state agencies, it reduces their flexibility in how they, you know, certainly it causes problems for just legally, it's an actual burden for state agencies. But here, we have an agency that was really just dead set on wanting to kill wolves. So they did not want wolves to be federally protected. They wanted wolves to come under state management so that they could have a hunting and trapping season. Wildlife managers are just that, right? They come from this mentality that animals need to be managed and that humans need to utilize this resource, and it's underutilized if it just is, you know, being beautiful out in nature and playing its ecosystem role. So I think that's really what we've got here in Minnesota, is an agency that really thinks the wolf should be managed through hunting and trapping. But one thing that's frustrating for me as a scientist, you know, I've got sort of the scientist hat and the lawyer hat, is that wolves, they're not like deer. You know, they're not typically a species that can be managed like a deer can, because of what this film talked about in terms of those social family units. And you can't just manage wolves like numbers, like maybe you could with deer, because it's not a simple equation, because you've got this family unit that really can suffer in ways that can't be calculated with a simple formula.
Not so much a question, rather a comment. I grew up way up north in northern Minnesota. When I was growing up, it wasn't so much the farmers, it was the hunters. The hunters, every deer that was taken by a wolf was one they couldn't take. So those were the ones that were pushing it. When I grew up, it was pretty much the economy. Either you supported the hunters or you supported the wolves. To the point, even when I was in school, when we were required to read Never Cry Wolf, Farley Mowat, there was people that took offense at that their children were reading a book like that. And it seems to be a cycle that kind of goes again and again and again, and the wolves never come out on top.
Well, I mean, in a way, the wolf is a competitor to man, but I think there's two different sides, one that values the wolf and the role it plays, and the other one that just sees the wolf as a competition. And I forget, I think it was 189,000 deer were killed last year in Minnesota. I guess that was on the low end, right? I think last year there's some name for it when they have to be careful of how many they kill or something. I don't think it's technical. But I was thinking to myself, isn't 189,000 enough? You know, that's a good amount, right? Like, are we really going to blame the wolf that that's not enough? You know, but yet Deer Hunters Association and some of the Livestock Association, they use it as a platform to get the bills passed and to prove somehow that we need to hunt wolves. But it's a pretty empty argument in my mind with those numbers, you know? Yeah.
And we have another question over here.
It's a terrific film. There's groups of people that I would like to show this film to. Is it going to be available in any way?
Thank you so much for asking.
I almost forgot.
I am an independent filmmaker. I call myself Me, Myself, and I Productions. And so I do marketing, I do have a distributor, I shouldn't say that, but I do most of the legwork. So we just made the DVD, and it'll be on the Facebook page. There'll be links to where you can order the DVD. And also, if there's anybody who'd like to see this film seen across the country, it's my goal to take it on the road, but it takes money to do that. So we're also open for donations. If anybody wants to contribute, you can go on medicinethewolf.com and donate there, and we'd be grateful. We've been to Eugene, Oregon so far. We've been to Portland, Oregon. We've been to Maine. We've been in Hawaii. We're going to go to Yellowstone this year. We've been to Minnesota several times. We want to cover the bases, especially Wisconsin. We want to get to Wisconsin, and we want to get to Michigan, predominantly where there's this issue. We also want to get to Colorado because some of you may know they're also looking at maybe reintroducing wolves in southern Colorado. Is that right? I think so. The Mexican wolf. So we're hoping to kind of get the film out to, you know, get the conversations going, get people interested in the value of wolves.
First of all, thank you for being here tonight. This film is really powerful. More people should see it. And so this question is more to Mr. Brandenburg. You say you haven't photographed the wolves now for 4.5 years. I really hope that you would reconsider that, because your images are so powerful and they speak to us in such a direct way that it is probably one of the most effective things that we can do, not just for the wolves, but for the wild areas, the ecology, the places in our world that we really want to hold on to, because when people see these images, I think they are more inclined to step back and say, wait a minute, maybe we don't need a mine right in that middle of that wild area. And so I am asking you, the question is, would you reconsider your understandable reluctance to take photos of these wolves? That's my question.
Yes, thank you. I might not have made myself clear. The wolves are gone where I live. I spent 30 years building a relationship with the wolves. They tolerated me. They didn't like me, but they tolerated me. I grew up in Laverne, Minnesota, the prairie, straight west of here, about 3 hours. And I've had the fantasy of living in the North Woods with the wolf pack. I did that finally, and it came true, and I've spent incredible numbers of years, joyous years, living with these wolves. And Nature 365 is a video that you can see on TV, or on the internet, Nature365.tv is the website, www.nature365.tv. You'll see more every year, every day of the year, we photographed the wolves and other animals near where I live up there, near Ely. There is a lot more footage that you can see of this particular group that I lived with, but since the wolf hunt, the dynamics have changed dramatically. I live right at the end of the Fernberg Road. Some of you probably, no one knows where that is outside of Ely. It's a unique situation where it's quite easy to see wolves from the car because it's right in the middle of the boundary waters. There's a corridor of a road that goes in right in the center, this vast 2.5 million acre wilderness area up there. Most of the wolves have not been killed by hunters that go out hunting during the season. Most of the wolves were killed by poachers because the government, the state government, the federal government, with a wink, have kind of said, well, we'll have an open season on wolves now, so wolves really aren't that important. So all the wolf haters go out with their shotguns, their sawed-off guns, and drive up and down the Fernberg Road that goes to my home, 20 miles from Ely to my home. They'll see a wolf, and they'll shoot it. And it's easy to do it. It's easy. It's so easy to do it. And so the wolves are gone from where I live. I live in a very wild area, but it's a very unique area. It's easy to violate the game laws there. It's very few game wardens, and it's so easy to shoot a wolf and kill it. I have not seen a wolf in 4.5 years in my home. I would photograph a wolf if I'd... That's what I do. I've done it my whole life. I've not seen a wolf in 4.5 years. I've seen their tracks, seen them on my trail cams, but their whole dynamic has changed. They're frightened. They didn't quite like me before. They trusted me. Now they have a completely different mindset, and they've dispersed. You kill a wolf in a family, and they kind of go a little bit crazy. Those of you that have dogs, when you leave to go to work, if you have 2 or 3 dogs or the neighbor dog is a part of the association, one of them dies or disappears, you notice how they're not the same for 2-3 weeks. Wolves are even more sensitive, and they become very disjointed and they just disperse. They look for new packs. And the strange fallacy is sometimes there's more predation of farm animals when you break up the pack. The young members that aren't good at hunting get desperate. They go off on their own because they're not held in a cohesive unit by the parents, by the dominant parents. So it's a long, I could talk all night about that, but my intent is to photograph, but they're not there where I live, where I've learned my blinds have been set up over the years. They're gone. That's because of the wolf hunt. We have to let our legislators know. And I don't know what else I can say is let's make this democracy work and let those 79% voices be heard. Thanks for the question.
Thank you. We're going to take 2 more questions. I've got one here, and then I'm going to take one back here, and then I think we're going to wrap up.
Fabulous documentary. Thank you very much. With the significant impact we're seeing from climate change now and we'll see more of, such a dramatic loss of habitat as your maps showed, and as Jim eloquently talked about, that inner instinct of the hunter-gatherer that many humans still have, the urbanization of these high-end predators, obviously the wolf, but the mountain lion and the coyotes and the clashes, the culture clash that occurs in the outskirts of large metro areas now when these animals come in and the fear that the people have. Do you foresee medicine of the cougar and medicine of the coyote? And answer to that, and when you get done, I'd love if Jim would step up to that microphone and give us a howl that'll take us all up there.
Aww. Yay! I was actually thinking about doing a film with actors next, believe it or not. But if you got something in mind, talk to me afterwards. We could talk about it. I just want to say that, and you know, I hear you. You know, it's daunting sometimes thinking about, you know, how the heck are we going to do this, you know, but there's so many people out there really working hard on this issue. Center for Biological Diversity being one, this group called Predator Defense, incredible, strong, hardworking group. They've done many documentaries about protecting predators, and they go to schools and educate people. People like the California Wolf Connection, where they teach people about the value of the wolf and the things that wolves and wolf packs teach us. So I just think we just need to keep chipping away, you know, and support these groups and support what they're doing, because they've got the energy to keep it up. But I think a lot of us are worried about that. Like Chima Ingen speaks about, you know, it's like this information has been around, you know, for many, many, many years. But unfortunately, as human beings, we're starting to get so self-centered and so into technology that we're forgetting what really holds everything together. And that is all of the creatures. We're losing sight of that. So you've inspired something in my head. Maybe there should be a medicine. Somebody told me one time, there needs to be a sequel to this.
The distributor that Julia works with, perhaps. I should share with you the economics. I wonder what you folks think about the economics of this is. Well, here's a lady in Los Angeles coming out. She's going to make a nice buck on making this movie. I can't imagine how much money you've lost on this movie. I mean, I can't imagine. She's worked 3 years on it, and there is no profit. Most of these movies that you see here, that's from the heart and soul. This isn't a business. This isn't an economic. This is not an economic thing. This is pure love. And voting for a winner makes a difference, as it's seen. The more festivals you win, you get higher. I think Julie could speak of this way more than I, but I know that you're noticed more, and it has a lot to do with winning festivals. And that's why a lot of these filmmakers are here. Hopefully they'll win, and then it could leverage that up.
Well, we're trying to get on Netflix right now, and my distributors, you know, they like when I say, oh, we just got this, or we just got this recognition, and then they can tell the big honchos at Netflix, oh, Medicine and Wolf got. So it does matter. It actually does. Every little stepping stone is an independent filmmaker in these ways do matter. People do notice. But I'm in L.A., so the competition is deep.
We're going to take one more question, and then we do have to wrap up, and then perhaps after this question we can get that howl from Jim if he'd be willing.
Thank you all for coming and speaking tonight. My question is briefly, how do they handle this issue in Canada?
It's not a good story, from what I know. With little I read about that, I was just reading something this afternoon about Alberta. Thousands and thousands of wolves are killed just in one specific area to control the wolves for caribou. There's a strange fallacy that if you kill the predator, the prey species will increase. Yeah, maybe a little bit, but it's out of proportion. I think it's a make-work project. But Canada has an incredible amount of wolf control. It's a huge country, a very wild country with lots of space. The wolves will never become endangered in Canada. It's just the incredible, inhumane concept of, for the small amount of gain, the amount of money, the amount of fighting, the amount of helicopters running around gunning the wolves down, the feeling that I get from that is it's almost reminds me of the Middle East sometimes. It's just insanity, how the tribal difference between us, this tribe, how we think about animals and nature, and that other tribe. Like, it's in competition and it's the enemy. I don't know how you change that. And it's exhibited by the people that are so angry that they see wolves killing their hunted species. I had a little interview with some students here earlier. The Native Americans valued the wolf, yet all they had were bow and arrows to kill their deer and moose. The wolves would kill them. They didn't feel them as competitors. They understood the full value of nature. I wonder if we've devolved so far now. The anger that you see in Washington shows up in game management. I don't even know what to say. I'm almost without words. You're with us every day politically, Colette, but I look at it and it really breaks my heart. But Canada, it's brutal. It's actually brutal. And Alaska, too. They're shooting wolves right on the edge of Denali National Park. It's crazy. It's beyond crazy. It's very depressing. If you understand and know and love wolves the way I have, living with them, literally living with them in the Arctic and Minnesota, to see the mythology and the misguided, even misguided science, sorry to say, in Minnesota, to promote wolf hunts is something I'm almost without words. It takes a stronger person than me, like these two beautiful ladies on the side here, to get it out. I'm out in the woods by myself making pictures with wolves, and I can't do it anymore. So we're going to howl, but I'm not going to do it alone, because wolves never howl alone. We're the wolf pack tonight. I'll start it. Okay? Are we finished?
I think
should we do it? Is that okay? I don't like to do this. It's like a... Oh! I haven't heard a wolf howl in 5 years either, so thank you for the wolf howl.
Thank you all. It was such an honor to have you here with us. Thank you.
Thank you to all who participated in the Q&A discussion following Medicine of the Wolf, including filmmaker Julia Huffman, Colette Adkins, Senior Attorney for Biological Diversity, and world-renowned photographer Jim Brandenburg. Today's Q&A was hosted by Frozen River Film Festival Director Crystal Heggie. More information on Medicine of the Wolf can be found at www.medicineofthewolf.com and on Facebook. More information on Frozen River Film Festival in Winona, Minnesota can be found at frff.org. I'm Terry Tensett, thanking you for listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.